Technology and politics are colliding in ways never seen before, from increased scrutiny of social media giants to the heated debate over net neutrality. Today on the GeekWire podcast, Senator Maria Cantwell is joining us to discuss these issues and her ongoing fight to preserve net neutrality, which the FCC overturned last year. I'm Monica Nicholsberg, GeekWire's Civic Innovation Editor. Senator Cantwell, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Monica. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, we've got a lot to dive into today, and I know that we're here to talk about net neutrality. But it strikes me as part of this bigger conversation about the intersection between technology and politics. It seems like consumers are really waking up to the tremendous power that technology and telecom companies wield. And I'm just wondering if you think that this is going to be a sea change. Are we really going to see meaningful regulation and changes, or is this just like backlash that's going to blow over?
Well, first of all, the biggest issue is that we are growing more and more and more of an online economy. So much of the applications, whether you're in a traditional industry that delivers a product that may be a physical product, you're still using the online environment to communicate with your customers, your business partners, solution providers. And so more and more of what we're doing is online. So it's growing in importance. It's growing in economic impact. It's growing in its global connectivity, which is empowering so many things. And now we're seeing so many new applications. So it's here to stay. And that means that we have to get it right as it relates to our individual rights and consumer issues.
Do you see that happening in the near future?
Well, I think we're starting to have that discussion. And it's not like we haven't been having the discussion. But I think we've been pretty prescriptive about some of these issues. That is to say that we've looked at privacy in very narrow ways of, well, how do we want it treated in the healthcare sector or the banking sector or, you know, online commerce. And I think it's going to evolve into a much broader discussion about privacy. And then I'm assuming you're referring to the writ large questions, too, about, you know, undue influence in our electoral process. And I think that also is going to get discussed. But we just need to own up. We're going to live in an information age. We're going to have a lot of online businesses and communication tools. And we're going to have a lot of public discussion about what are the roadmaps and rules of that new way of communication.
So Facebook is obviously at the heart of this. And you were there for Mark Zuckerberg's congressional testimony. What did you think?
Well, it was I wanted to do a good job of bringing up this larger issue about the impact on our elections and, you know, the fact that from time to time, government also overreaches. I have had a chance being in the United States Senate to question our government on some of its overreach, starting a long time ago when we had the Clipper chip, which somebody thought would be a good idea for our U.S. government to have a backdoor to our computer hardware. And we fought very hard against that, and we were successful in defeating it. And there were times when right after 9/11, there were software solutions that people like Magic Lantern and other things that we thought also were going to cause violations that we spoke out about. So it's not that we haven't had this discussion before, but now we see it in such a monumental way across so many different consumers who may have shared information and data that then is used in a way that they didn't think was going to be used that way. And now we have state actors who are literally trying to hack our networks and cause undue influence in our electoral process. So as I said, it's, you know, I used to say that we were at just the tip of the iceberg at the information age. Now I think we've actually looked underwater and we see this massive, massive change underway. And I think we're just going to have to spend a lot of time discussing it.
I think I remember this moment where you accused Mark Zuckerberg of perhaps trying to outfox the foxes because it's been such a long history of that company apologizing. After the testimony, what was your conclusion? Do you feel like that is what's going on there?
Well, I think the challenge for Facebook, and certainly the challenge for us as regulators, we have to take this threat to our elections very seriously. the fact that people think that there was undue influence on our elections. One of the great things about our nation, the thing that I find so prideful, is that we have free and fair elections. I think that distinguishes us from other countries. And we should be so prideful that we can have a discussion and have those elections and move forward. Throw that into chaos, and all of a sudden, there is a lot of distrust and a lot of concern. And I think those are the challenges that we face now. So I think it was the beginning of a conversation. I definitely don't think it was the end of a conversation. And I hope that they realize that they have to do a lot more than they're doing today, a lot more. So we'll see. We'll see how they respond. I'm sure we are going to respond with legislation, but let's see what they say as well.
Sure. So we're talking about Facebook, which is an edge provider. But now let's talk about the underlying infrastructure that allows a company like Facebook to exist. I know that net neutrality is a really key issue for you. And this is obviously the Obama era regulation that requires all internet providers to treat content online the same, meaning they can't slow down a Facebook in favor of their own social network, for example. At the end of the year, the FCC voted to repeal net neutrality, but I think some of it's gotten a little lost since then. So maybe you can update our listeners about where the net neutrality battle at the federal level stands.
Well, at the federal level, the internet is under attack, really, by the FCC moving forward on something that will allow cable companies and others to create faster and slower lanes, artificially charge more, create a pricing scheme that could be very detrimental to startups and innovation. So the challenge is now to do something about the FCC's ruling. It would require Congress to act. And that is the challenge that we face now, trying to overturn what the FCC has done, either by overturning their rule or passing a new law that would be the long-term protection for net neutrality as a policy. So I'm very committed to the long-term battle and making sure that we do have an open and free internet that isn't artificially made more expensive or that puts its thumb against new innovators by making them pay more for faster service. This is just so fundamental to the innovation that we want to see. We're going to have a shot in May with trying to overturn what the FCC did. There is a process called the Congressional Review Act in which Congress can take a rule by an administrative agency and overturn it. And right now we're working very hard to try to raise awareness with the general public that such a vote should happen and get people to help us communicate why this is so important to overturn. And so that will likely happen when we return to Washington, D.C. in a week.
And what do you think is the likelihood of it actually going through?
Well, we need to get some colleagues to help us on the other side of the aisle. I think some of our colleagues who come from states that really understand technology should join us in helping to fight for an open internet that would allow us to preserve the innovation that comes with not having fast and slow lanes and pricing that would thwart innovation. But so far, we haven't found one on the Republican side.
So it hinges on one vote, essentially.
Or a few votes, I would say, yes.
Yeah. So the Open Internet Order was passed in 2015. This was in Obama's FCC. And that really established what we know as net neutrality, or codified it at least. So what do you make of this argument that the internet wasn't broken before 2015?
Well, you can go back to the Commerce Committee. I remember us having a conversation in the committee. The late Ted Stevens, God rest his soul, was the chairman at the time. And, you know, the discussion then was about, you know, what was the internet? And I just remember because I think it was John Stewart did a parody of him later because he kept saying, well, it's just a bunch of tubes. And the internet isn't a bunch of tubes. And it is a new network of very important communication tools that is going to empower so many new applications. So I think that this moment has been developing as each new online application has been developing. The question then becomes, as we try to think about new investment and ways in which to preserve that opportunity. I'm pretty sure just as we did with telephone and universal service, how do we achieve that? And so I would say prior to the Obama administration, we were still having conversations about this. They were at a time when they thought the internet was being threatened, wanted to put down a basis for the discussion. And that basis for discussion was those rules at that time during their administration. And I think that they put in place the concept that, no, we don't want to have people artificially charging more. We don't want to have two types of internet, those who can pay for a lot of broadband and fast speed and those that can't. We don't want that. So I don't know that anybody ever thought that that was the ultimate end of the conversation, but they thought it was a very good protection and certainly the beginning of keeping the foundation of the internet, that free and open access for so many people.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the GeekWire podcast. This GeekWire podcast is sponsored in part by Fred Hutch Obliteride, a fundraising bike ride and 5K walk to raise millions of dollars with the goal of curing cancer faster. Scenic routes for all levels of riders include 25-mile, 50-mile, and 100-mile rides, plus a 5K walk. Be a superhero and invest in Fred Hutch scientists to end cancer once and for all. Obliteride takes place August 11th. Registration and info at obliteride.org. Welcome back to the GeekWire podcast. I'm Monica Nicholsberg, joined by Senator Maria Cantwell. I think what I want to drill into a little bit is why net neutrality is so important to you, and why tiered pricing of the internet is inherently a bad thing. Because if you think of the analogy of like a system of roads, you know, we have carpool lanes, we have toll lanes. There are instances where you pay more or you get a special privilege. Why should the internet not be that way?
Because we're talking about something basic as a foundation. And the foundation that we're trying to go after is something that isn't about creating an artificial barrier for that innovation. So when I think about all of the innovation that's happened and the solutions that you now see, it happened because people had good connectivity and people had the ability to take what had been this other 14-4 dial-up world, you know, before you guys were born probably. But that world was not empowering a lot of applications. So once we put adequate broadband on the table, you empowered so many solutions. And now it almost has become a standard operating part of everybody's business, whether you're in healthcare or whether you're in real estate or whether you're in education. And so now all of a sudden you want to draw a line that says, oh, for those of you who can pay a lot, we'll have that same connectivity. For those of you who can't, we're going to send you back to the 14-4 world. Not quite the 14-4 world, but a world in which maybe you'll have fast enough service to do what you want, or maybe you won't, and you will become a second tier.
You mentioned startups earlier. Is that who you're thinking of now?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Because they might not have the resources to pay for faster service?
Well, also because I think this is one of the big issues of our time, particularly, you know, sitting on the Commerce Committee. I think about the, you know, how do we in this era, and, you know, back all the way to the Facebook hearing, you know, how do you make sure there is an open discussion without influence, without behemoths, you know, targeting, you know, information? So you want to have many voices. And if you start all of a sudden with a system that is going to squash some of those voices or applications or innovations because they don't have the money to pay, then aren't you going to get a concentration of companies at the top? And we don't want that. That we definitely don't want that. We want the next innovation to come along. And obviously, as a startup, they don't have the same resources. And so what, you won't get off the ground because no one will go to your service because it's not as fast or as resourceful for what you need. So that's just, you know, it's really, really threatening directly to innovation.
What about innovation in the telecom world? We just had yesterday news break that T-Mobile is planning to merge with Sprint. And obviously, that's going to need to get regulatory approval. But I'm curious what you think of the deal. They are billing it as good for consumers. Do you think that's true?
We haven't seen all the details yet. We're probably going to have the ability to get some oversight at the committee on it. I think the thing that might be different from other previous discussions, you know, other mergers, is these are not the top entity trying to consolidate the market, but maybe some of the other players trying to gain foothold. But we're going to review it. We're going to look and see how that does affect consumers, let the public comment, hear from them about what are the issues that they think, how will we be best served in all of this. And I do think it's a really important discussion to have.
Do you think that they will get federal approval? Because it seems like deals like this have fallen through a lot faced with regulatory hurdles.
Well, I think in the past, as I said, if you're the number one and you're trying to buy the number two, that's a pretty big question. If you are, you know, three and four trying to merge to give competition to one and two, might be a different conversation. And so my guess is that'll be a little bit of what this discussion will be. And what does it mean? What will it mean for consumers? And so it's a very important discussion. So I'm sure taking the time to have that is really going to be something we want to see the department do, and to have people be able to weigh in on a consumer level.
So we're seeing a little bit of consolidation in the wireless world, but there aren't a lot of players in the broadband world. And this discussion about net neutrality and protecting consumers, it just has me wondering if maybe another route to go is revisiting the idea of publicly owned broadband, so that Americans have more than one or two broadband providers to choose from. And if one is run by the government, then perhaps it will be a little more consumer friendly. What are your thoughts?
Well, we have a couple of places in the state that have publicly owned broadband. And I think they've, you know, faced challenges of how to get services to consumers and how to make sure that the investment that's been made by the taxpayer writ large is everybody's comfortable with it. And so, I hope we can find some applications there. I want us to have competition. I just think, again, we're still seeing the unfolding of what it means to live in an information age. We're still seeing that. And I'm pretty sure that we're going to see that we don't want to be held hostage by anybody. And we definitely don't want somebody to use their power vertically to create roadblocks to access. And, you know, part of the question is, you've had some of these broadband players also getting into the content business, and questions about what will that mean to access to content or controlling information. So I think we're going to see that we want to have more competition there. And how exactly we're going to get there is going to be an interesting question, really going to be an interesting question. But we're going to live more and more this way. We're going to live with 1,000 different applications in our day-to-day life. We are. We're going to be charging our cars in our garage. We're going to be controlling the electricity in our house. We're going to be accessing education and, you know, communicating and, you know, with our coworkers, you know, online and group discussions. We're going to be probably seeing healthcare delivered to the home every morning, with seniors checking in with physicians instead of going to the hospital and having four or five vital health statistics transferred back to the healthcare provider. It's just going to be so big. So I think we're going to find that, wait, how is broadband delivered? And how do we make sure that we're empowering that? And how do we make sure it's the right price and not overcharged? And how do we make sure that they're not controlling too many aspects of the equation? And so it's here to stay. That question's here to stay. So I think we should keep looking at this public model and see who's doing interesting work there. I don't know that we've hit on the killer app. I don't know that.
When you say killer app, you mean like the killer application for municipal broadband or public internet?
Well, I keep thinking that if you had, you know, some of the cities or places we know where this exists, you know, they're having a challenge keeping it and providing a key service that everybody is really excited about. And I just think that we should keep looking at that and see what someone comes up with. And maybe they'll come up with something that everybody will be really, you know, really excited about. Clearly, I think for rural areas, you know, we've been helpful in trying to get broadband service to various parts of our state that are the farthest reaches where they've had problems. And many times it's just been a communication with using the last mile or using some of our public utility districts to help provide the solution at the last mile, and then working with broadband providers. But you keep thinking in those equations, there's got to be something that, you know, that helps service everybody. And I do think our state is unique in that we've taken a couple of steps with those public utility districts and helping to provide solutions. But I just don't know yet what, you know, what would nurture and grow public offerings in, you know, in a bigger way than where we are today.
Let's talk a little bit more about our state, because Washington was the first state to pass its own net neutrality protections, which is sort of a controversial thing, because when the FCC repealed net neutrality, they said that that authority preempts the state and local government's ability to pass its own laws. So do you think we're going to see lawsuits from internet providers or the FCC against Washington and other states that have taken these measures?
I don't know about that, but my guess is the state will have some applications that they can apply the state law to that will probably make providers think twice and then hopefully help us with what we need from the national level. You know, the big concern that we have is that this will quietly go on. Like, if we're not successful, now we're going to fight very hard on the Congressional Review Act to repeal what the FCC's done and to protect the internet with net neutrality laws that make sure that there's no undue or excessive charges or slowdowns. But we don't want to see this be like a slow seeping of charges or slowdowns that all of a sudden, you know, that go on for years and people don't notice and then become more, I'm not saying acceptable is the right word, because how do you know when that startup couldn't compete and didn't grow? You might not see that. So I think that our state and the other states that have passed something are a really key voice in saying to the federal government, we're going to fight this and we're going to use every resource that we can to fight it. And if it means fighting in our states, we're going to do that too. So I do think that this is like they're a great backstop against that slow seeping policy that might in the next year or so inch out there.
It kind of reminds me of this idiom that I'm sure you've heard, but the only thing that businesses hate more than regulation is uncertainty. I'm just curious, as we're seeing this growing patchwork of state laws with their own quirks and requirements for net neutrality, do you think that internet providers would rather go back to a certain federal protection that's the same across the board?
That's a good question. I don't know that they feel that way today. I saw an article online this morning that there were several cable companies who had pledged support for net neutrality, but as soon as the FCC ruling came down, they struck that off of their web page, so thereby disappearing from the whole focus on net neutrality. So I think for now they think that they have the upper hand and they're probably going to try to move forward and try to just see if the public's paying attention. And so our job is to try to get the public to pay attention and to weigh in, and hopefully they will.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the GeekWire podcast. Welcome back to the GeekWire podcast. I'm Monica Nicholsberg, joined by Senator Maria Cantwell. So we've been watching this Congressional Review Act play out, and we can see what's happening from a public-facing point of view. But, you know, we've got a senator in our office today, so I'm curious what the behind-the-scenes fight to preserve net neutrality looks like.
Well, I think really it is about getting consumers to weigh in with some of the larger tech companies to get them to use their voice. When it came to the SOPA and PIPA fight, they used their voice and it was heard in Washington. And now I think a lot of companies are thinking, well, let's see how this plays out. We don't know what's going to happen. And what we need them to do is realize we need them to join the fight, that they are some of the biggest communication tools that we have, and their ability to let their online listeners, viewers, customers weigh in on this would be really, really helpful. And so we're hoping that the companies that exist here in our state will join the fight and help us.
We've had some companies really step out. Etsy and Reddit, I know, have been really big on this issue. So who is it that you want to hear more from? Like, who's conspicuously silent on this?
Well, I don't know if they're silent, but they could be louder. I think all the tech companies in our state, all the tech companies, every one of them could be louder and could be more vocal about what the impact is. And I know that we just want to be a very nurturing environment for startups. And, you know, if you're a big player today, you probably think, oh, well, I'll be able to negotiate a good rate. So I'm a big, you know, I have a lot of market share. I'll get a good deal. And so it may be that you think, why jump into the middle of this? Why do I have to jump in? But I would say to them that we want the 1,000 flowers to bloom of other companies that are yet to come. And we don't want them to be shut down from access to good broadband, or have to pay some exorbitant amount that would make it so that they wouldn't be able to come up with new solutions. I know that we have a couple of things that a couple of companies here who people have talked about, Zillow and Redfin, they're companies that are, you know, changing the way that we buy real estate. And you think if in the early days of those companies, if they would have been throttled or had to pay more, would they have ever gotten off the ground? And you just think that these larger companies have to weigh in for the future, too, not just where they are today as a company, but they have to weigh in for those other applications that are yet to be created.
So you come from Washington and from a tech background. You've got a state with a really booming tech industry. If it was just a Senate of one, what would be the top tech issue that you would take on? Would it be net neutrality, or do you think there's something more pressing that we're facing?
I'm very concerned about our free and fair elections. I really am. I'm very concerned both from the perspective of the level of cybersecurity that we need to have to protect our elections from undue hacking and undue influence. And, you know, we're now seeing government state-owned actors who are attacking things like our power grid. And so the notion that they could play into this, you know, from what now our law enforcement is saying is undue influence in our elections, that really worries me. So I want to get that right. I want to make sure that the United States and that people have confidence in our system and that they believe that their information is going to be protected and that the kinds of activities that we have, whether it's banking or what have you, is going to be secure in this environment. So the whole effort of just having a safe online environment is really, really important.
Is that what you had on your mind when you brought up Palantir, the data analysis company founded by Peter Thiel in Mark Zuckerberg's congressional testimony?
Yes.
You called it Stanford Analytica. What did you mean by that?
Well, when you think about how much previous attempts by government agencies to get information to influence people, you look at what kinds of efforts. I brought up at the hearing something that our own government had tried years ago that was shut down. My colleague Ron Wyden and others had helped to shut that down. So I wanted to set the stage for, I get that some people think we're just talking about social media here, but it has far-reaching implications beyond social media. And now that we know that we've had this undue influence, what are we going to do moving forward? How are we going to look at this moving forward? So I really wanted to draw the contrast that we need to get this right as it relates to consumer online privacy, but a much bigger thing is out there if we're allowing this to influence elections and processes that people may not even understand how. And so I thought that was a really, really important point to bring up about how much is this going on in places that we don't really know and understand. And is that maybe not what they had in mind at the start of Facebook, but is that what has happened? And clearly, I think Cambridge Analytica points to the fact that it did happen and that people were, even in the election, still down in Texas working together, the Trump campaign, Cambridge Analytica, and even Facebook, whether it's meaningful service or not, you know, that remains to be seen. We're still waiting for some information back from Facebook. But nonetheless, there was a lot of people working really hard with information to influence this process in a way that I don't think the American people had a clue about. And I'm not sure they still do. I think this hearing was probably the beginning of a very large discussion that's going to continue to happen.
What do you wish the American people knew about Palantir?
That as a company and a question about information, that there are lots of people that are in this business. And for time to time, even our government has tried to do this. And that there are rules that we should put in place to protect people's privacy and information. And I'm very supportive of my colleague, Senator Klobuchar's legislation on making sure that elections online have the same rules that you have to, if you're a broadcast entity here on TV or radio, comply with, that they have to comply with the same things. And so, to me, these are laws and regulations that we have to put in place.
And that piece of legislation is the Honest Ads Act, right?
Yes.
That's what you're referring
yes.
to?
Yes. One of the things we need to do. Yes.
What else do you think is likely to pass maybe this year?
Well, we'll have larger conversations. You know, we brought up the European Union regulations on privacy, so I'm sure we'll discuss that. We're not in charge of the Commerce Committee at this moment, so we'll have to see what Senator Thune and others are willing to bring up. But we think all of those things are important to get right and that we know what is the influence for this coming election.
So I think a lot of these issues are really important to our readers, but I think among them and maybe even among the general public, there's a feeling of powerlessness, whether it's protecting your data online or securing the internet from paid prioritization. Net neutrality itself is sort of a squishy and difficult concept to grasp. So if someone was listening to this podcast and wanted to have a meaningful impact, what's the best way that they can do that?
Well, now help us with net neutrality rules.
But how can they help?
Call these companies in our state and ask them to be loud and vocal about securing strong net neutrality laws. That would be the biggest thing. I think if consumers ask these companies to participate, or workers in these companies ask them to participate, or they make it visible online that they think that it is a big issue, I think people will respond. And as I said earlier on other privacy debates, that's what happened, and that's why we were successful.
Well, Senator Cantwell, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Monica.
That's all for today. If you're interested in reading about the intersection of technology and politics, check out our coverage on GeekWire.com. Be sure to check back in May when Congress is likely to take up the issue of net neutrality. From GeekWire.com, I'm Monica Nicholsberg. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the GeekWire podcast. Follow all of our coverage of tech and science news at GeekWire.com and subscribe to our shows on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcasts.